This podcast is brought to you by our partners at 8 Star Energy.
8 Star Energy, a clean energy company, leading the future of portable and renewable energy.
To find out more, follow them on Facebook at 8 Star Energy.
I want attacking purpose for football all the time. Now we're going to have backs against the wall and we're going to fight and we're going to fight hard. You've got to show me all the guts and all the determination you've got in your body. You've got to inspire me.
A marvellous kick. That's as good as you'll ever see. And Footscray back in front. From inside the centre square, Boyd's kicked the goal. Boyd's kicked the goal. From inside the centre. I can't believe that.
Hey Dogs fans, welcome to Danny Boyd, a podcast about the greatest football club in the universe, and hell, I'm going to call it the multiverse. That is the Footscray Football Club, trading as Western Bulldogs. My name is Danny McGinley. With me, a man who kicked with 86% efficiency in the 2016 Grand Final, and that is why we won. Tom Boyd! Hey Tom, guess what?
Finally got in the Grand Final again. I know. It's quite ridiculous. After 62 years between winning a premiership, there's an opportunity to win 2 in 5 years, which would be
extraordinary. It's like buses. You wait an hour and then 2 show up at once.
Yeah, absolutely. I must say I had sort of some reserved sentiment leading into the game, but the moment that it all kicked off, I felt a bit prophetic when I saw the fact that the whole thing just went exactly the way I was hoping it to. We silenced the crowd early. We took off and Port Adelaide withered like lettuce in the sun.
Mate, we got a lot of feedback about how you guessed exactly what would happen. So we're going to get your predictions later on. But let's bring in our guest. He's one of the most passionate football fans in the world. You'd know him from The Chaser. You'd know him from Planet America. You'd know him from sitting near you at a Bulldogs game, eating a weird snack. Chaz Licadello!
Hello there. I cannot believe that we are in the Grand Final. And I can't believe I'm on this podcast on Grand Final week. When you've had you should have had Toby McLean for a third time. I am so not worthy to be here on Grand Final week. It is awesome. Oh, Fortnite. It's incredible. I'm pinching myself, honestly.
Well, Chad, that's good because you're not here in Grand Final week. This is Grand Final Fortnite. And
That is true.
Have you next week. Don't worry. We've got big news about next week's show. So
two times, Chaz. I don't want to correct you, Danny, straight off the bat. I don't correct you generally, but just on when you're talking about us, it was Tom saying it's like a surprise that this is our second grand final in 5-6 years, depending on how you define it. It's not a surprise at all. We are, by my calculations, the second most successful club in the league. And let me tell you what they are. They're very specific calculations.
Great. We love calculations.
I'm ignoring premierships. Ignoring grand finals. Who cares about them? Who cares about them? I'm only counting preliminary finals and only for the last 25 years because before then doesn't matter. So let's pick a random year, say 1997, no particular reason.
Okay,
let's do it. Unless the preliminary finals from 1997 onwards. And if you have a look, Geelong has been in 12 preliminary finals. And then who's second? Bulldogs, 7. Now, sure, we are sharing them with Hawthorn and Port and Brisbane and North. But equal second most preliminary finals in the league in the last precisely 25 years. So there you go. We're a Leviathan.
And if you went to 96 and 95, what happens to the whole Geelong thing? Because I'm pretty sure that goes up again. Didn't they win the – they were in the grand final in 95.
And North obviously. North obviously passes. I picked 25 years for a precise reason. But let's not lift the hood. Let's not lift the hood. Let's just look at the beautiful car. That's just purring.
I've got to admit, this is the first time that anyone's ever told me that the Bulldogs are the second most successful team. It's never happened. Not in the history of my time at the Dogs has that ever come up in conversation. Right. I don't know about you, Danny. What was your experience been? I imagine that we've been the battling club since you've been young.
Oh, yeah. No, you get the rest of the AFL saying that we're the battlers and the working class and the plucky little group of misfits who you just want to do well. Or you get people like me who say, no, we are the greatest club. We are the best club. Of course, everything we do. I mean, I'll tell you how we are the team that wins the most. Moral victories.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I'm going to do here, Danny. I'm going to fit three things into a very short period of time. First and foremost, we've always been the underdog side, which lends itself to the conversation surrounding how we're going to go this week, which I must say is only exemplified as well as possible with your most recent TikTok, which came out. So you might as well put your TikTok on the show. What are you at, Danny? Where do we find you on TikTok?
Oh, God, I don't know. I just chuck them. I had to get a child to show me how to do it, and I just chucked it. I am at Danny McGinlay. That works.
At Danny McGinlay. So your most recent TikTok that came up was the comparison between the Melbourne supporters celebrating making the grand final and the Bulldogs supporters making the grand final. The Melbourne supporter was drinking a bottle of 97 Grange, and the Bulldogs supporter was drinking a warm Crownie he found in the car park one time. Leads me to my question to both of you, which is, how are you both feeling about this week? Because obviously we're all Bulldog supporters here, but Melbourne haven't won in a long, long time. But I still think that compared to 2016, there's a lot more resentment towards Melbourne than there is towards us. So I think we're still in with a fighting chance if we're talking about general population support. I don't know what you both think.
Well, up in Sydney, it's no one even knows AFL exists. So let's leave Sydney aside. But generally speaking, the impression I get is that I feel like Bevo is very popular. Generally speaking, as a coach, mainly because he just takes slabs off the press, and I think football supporters love coaches that go reporters. And I think that the fact that he just keeps like just this week he hit with Treloar as well. I feel like Bevo is much loved. But I mean, Melbourne's got such a reputation as being like a real sort of Toffs team, don't they? You know, the ski slopes, the Range Rovers, all that kind of stuff.
Oh yes.
But on the other hand, we've had this free kick Bulldogs thing for the last couple of years as well, which also in 2016 as well.
Yeah.
So like I feel like, but then again,
do you know what my favourite text I got from a. On Saturday night, getting all the texts, congratulations. I did get one from a Bombers mate of mine who said, if Cody hadn't staged for those free kicks in the elimination, Essendon would be in a grand final.
That's quite a leap. By the way, with the free kick Bulldog thing, let me just say for the record, I know it's just Bulldog supporters listening to this, but still, just for the record, the Bulldogs don't get more free kicks than other teams. We give away less free kicks than other teams. It's discipline. They're just the Dogs are just a more disciplined team.
Because they always – so you're digging into the stats more. So because I always obviously see the discrepancy number.
Yeah.
That's the one they throw in your face is the discrepancy number.
Exactly.
That's what Limo always talks about on my other pod. He's saying, look at this. Hawthorn are like third last in the – because I went in free kick Hawthorn for years. And so he's thrown that back. This is great. What a weaponry you've given us, Chaz.
It's a pleasure. If you look at the table.
Well, it all started with free kick Chris Judd, didn't it?
Free kick Chris Judd? Was that it?
I reckon people were probably interested in free kicks before the 2000s, Tom. I know you're young.
They only started paying holding the ball in 2004. So remember that incorrect disposal was a thing, and then all of a sudden you weren't allowed to sit on the ball. That's like one of my first memories of a rule change where they were like, you can't just sit on it anymore. And then everyone was like, oh, these umpires are controlling the game. That was like one of my first memories.
Boydie, I've got my love letters from my grandfather to my grandmother when he was in the war, and he just references free kick Bob Skilton over and over.
He won 5 Brownlows off the back of that sentiment.
He did.
By the way, I actually am genuinely, and we were talking about the underdog thing, I actually am genuinely concerned a little bit about the fact that this grand final, I wouldn't say 50-50, but and in all the finals to now, we've been 10-90, 20-80. We've been like injured and in quarantine and everything's been shit. And they love, the team love getting up against adversity. Same thing in 2016, same thing. Bevo's obviously very good at coaching through adversity. I'm worried that with this week off, they're going to be relatively well rested and there isn't so much adversity. I want them to stay in a volcano. I want Libba to get leprosy. I want them to have to overcome the odds to give us the greatest chance of winning this grand final. That's my concern.
I think that We were definitely underdogs in 2016 in the grand final, but we probably shouldn't have been. We'd had the stick over Sydney for some time, and we were very confident going in. So if there's some sort of synergy between the 2 years, I think it's that they've sort of crawled over their hardest task so far. And the other thing is, if you think about it, we played phenomenal on Saturday night. But it's hard to remember a better prelim performance than Melbourne's on Friday night as well. And also probably hard to remember a worse one than Geelong's, to be honest. That was abysmal.
I watched on the couch on Monday, and again, just a sidebar before I make my point. Is anyone else really pissed off by how little all of the media are not talking about the Dogs? On the couch, AFL 360, I listen to AFL Daily. It's seriously, I know I've made this joke before, but I genuinely feel we win the flag on Saturday week, and then they're going to cut to AFL 360. They'll spend 30 seconds on the Bulldogs, and then the rest of the episode is about Collingwood's trade prospects. Anyway, the point.
Chad's in Sydney, so he's probably like, "What do you mean? Is there AFL football coverage at all?"
No, Boydie, I wanted to ask a genuine AFL question. Who played worse, Port or Geelong? Because I watched on the couch and I watched them talk about the D's for like, you know, an hour. And I was like, yeah, I suppose Geelong were rubbish. Maybe we could beat the D's is good. But then they talked about our game and they were just talking about how bad Port were. And I was like, oh, maybe we haven't been challenged. Oh, God. So as an actual football brain person, who played worse?
Well, firstly, to address your comment, I think we got plenty of coverage after 2016 because I was the beneficiary of a lot of it. So the issue is that how long has it been since Melbourne have won? 50-odd years or 30s? How long? It's been
64 to now 55?
Yeah, okay. 57. That was some quick maths.
57.
Yeah.
57. Jeez,
some quick wrong maths from Danny there.
Yeah. So it's such a long time. 57 years is such a long time. So they're rightfully getting their just deserves at the moment. My thought is that when I look back at the aftermath of the Geelong game, there's all these people who are like, they're making up excuses and yada, yada, yada. But they did look like they were a bit battered going in. And then, you know, this virus thing leaked out that they had and they were crook before the game. That I'm not as keen on because you don't want to leak that post prelim loss, especially not when you look like that. It makes you look like you're making up excuses. But I think Port Adelaide's performance was more disappointing in the scheme of things is what I'm trying to get at. Like, they were red hot, unbackable favourites, home ground advantage. Dogs have been on the road. Dogs hadn't even been able to train. We looked battered. Bont's injured. We're bringing in a ruckman out of the blue. Hasn't seen any game time in 5 months. They were extraordinarily disappointing. I'm sure that they'll be, their club will be absolutely reeling from that loss. I'm 100% sure. So,
the stat that was doing the rounds, and I'm sure you guys have probably both heard this, but yeah, hey, I've got to bring something. is that the end of the first quarter, Port were down 23 in contested possession, which is the record for the biggest differential in a quarter in finals history, according to champion data. So that's pretty disappointing.
See, your first mistake, Chad, was again, was thinking that we actually used this platform to analyse stats at all. me and Danny just make stuff up the whole time.
Oh, we get stuff sent to us.
But that does make sense. Like, when I watched that first quarter, my thought process was, they're witches' hats. And, I mean, it felt very similar on Friday night. I don't know what you thought, but, like, we were just so dominant through the middle of the ground and they looked slow and they looked, it was
Is there a stat for, and I reckon Saturday we benefited from it, but I'd say more often than not we don't, fortunate bounces where the ball sort of lands and there was a couple of times where it just sort of like, it's like the ball just wanted to go, oh, I like Bailey Smith's hair. I want to go in his arms.
Yeah.
Isaac Newton, who invented gravity, was on our side.
Yeah. I don't know about that. So on the Friday night, I not so much in the ball bounces, but you know those balls that are like pinging around, like bouncing off feet and heads and hands, and they all of a sudden spill out and they land in someone's arms. I remember thinking that on Friday night about Melbourne, that every like 5 minutes, there'd just be this chaos ball that would just land in like Stephen May's hands or Jake Lever's hands, and it would just sort of kickstart their offense. But to answer your question, I don't think it's luck. Generally, these things don't happen like over and over again just by luck. I think that we were just probably 5 steps ahead of them. So
good.
How are you feeling, Chad? I've got to ask because, you know, me and Danny have spoken a little bit about this. How are you feeling leading into this grand final as opposed to last? Like, I know Danny spent basically at least 6 of the last 7 days before the previous grand final in an anxiety-ridden state. He's just like, I want it to be over. I want it to be over. This time around, he seems slightly more calm, which is good. We've got a bit of an extended break. So how are you feeling leading into this game? Are you confident? What's the feeling like?
There's a big difference for me as well from 2016, but I was the direct opposite to Danny. First of all, my grand final in 2016 was the preliminary final. Like, I was at the GWS game. It was the highlight of my life. I hated GWS. Sorry, Tom, I know you came from GWS, but I hated them with a passion. And to me, I just could not get over how great that was when we beat GWS. And also, I'd been to a bunch of the previous preliminary finals as well. So preliminary finals for me were a big deal, getting over that hump. And so the fact we even made the grand final was enough for me. And also, just quietly, what you said before about Sydney, I was thinking the same. I was thinking, I think we're kind of favourites. Even though people weren't saying that, I remembered how much we kind of owned Sydney in the SCG earlier in the season when we weren't playing that well. We still own them at the SCG. And I thought, well, at the MCG, and we're playing really well at the moment, we've got a pretty good chance. So I actually, number one, this will be sacrilegious, but number one, I actually didn't even care whether we won because I was already celebrating the preliminary final win. And secondly, I kind of expect us to win anyway.
Yeah, I was a bit like that.
Yeah, whereas this time around, I'm definitely not expecting us to win against Melbourne. I think we've got a good shot, but I think Melbourne are playing outrageous football. Like the thing which I'm kind of – that gives me a lot of hope, though, at the same time is just I feel like – and this is the same in 2016. I feel like we got a lot of big game players. I feel like if you go down the list, like all those mids, Bont and Libber and Jack McRae, these are all Dunkley. These are all big game players. Even the kids, Cody Waitman, Aaron Norton, they're big game players as well. Yeah, Bally Smith, big game player. What's his name? Guy from Game of Thrones.
Caleb Daniel.
No, I can't believe I've forgotten his name. Durea.
Yeah, Doc Durea, yes.
That's it. Yes, Ramsey, yeah. Yeah, he's a big game player.
Okay, I've not watched all of Game of Thrones. What's the reference there?
Need to Google Ramsey later. Yeah, he's a sadistic.
He looks exactly like Durea,
person who likes decapitating people.
Yeah. Okay, sounds fun.
Anyway, our team is absolutely filled with big game players, and Melbourne have a few themselves, but I'm not at the very least, I'm confident we're not going to get smashed. At the very least, it will be the worst case scenario, it will be a good match because they're not going to fold. And so I am confident but Melbourne are playing very well.
I think the discrepancy between big game and, for want of a better term, like any time player gets thrown around a bit because, like, if you think back to the Dogs year, whenever our backs are up against the wall and we're, you know, we went to that horrible situation in Perth where we had to play West Coast over there, you're inside for 7 days and then you've got to come out and play a full game of AFL football, which I can't even express to you is how difficult that is, especially when you're not getting any fresh air. Like, you're in a quarantine hotel. Or you talk about the Port Adelaide game where we played them over there and we beat them. Like, all of these big games – or very difficult games, our midfield turn up every time. And I think that gives us a real good opportunity because, again, not to preach on what we said last week, Danny, but that's where the game's going to be won and lost, it, I think, this week. So I'm reasonably confident that we'll make a very good showing of it. It'll just be up to, I think, probably which best 5 players from either team make the most of their possessions and the most impact probably over the day.
And surely,
I reckon the most important body part on Optus Stadium will be Aaron Norton's hands because it just seems whenever he holds on to contested marks, we win. The whole team just sort of goes, oh, sweet, Norton's on. Okay, that's all I have to do. Kick it into him and we'll be fine.
I might contend you with one other set of hands on the ground. Might be Max Gawn's hands. Might be the biggest.
I was going to say, for me, the real issue is going to be how Stefan holds up with Tim English against Gawn. Because if Gawn plays like he did on Friday, that's hard to match.
He can't play that well again. It's not possible.
Boydy, what about the fact that they've only played one game in a month?
Not relevant, I don't think, personally.
Okay.
I don't, it's been a tough year. A lot of travel, a lot of bubbles. Like, these guys are professional. I mean, if you looked at Melbourne on Friday or you looked at us on Friday, the two most capable and prepared teams are ready to go. Like, they're not gonna let up now. The next 2 weeks aren't going to change anything, unfortunately, I don't think.
Well, except that Alex Keith will feel better, Cody Waitman can play, and Bont's got another week to make his knee somehow even stronger.
Yeah, and Stephen May will be fresher. Any of their sore boys will be. So I actually think I don't like the 2 weeks off. Like, I don't like the fortnight before the granny. But in all honesty, if you're talking about getting the best possible grand final with the best players out there, it's going to give us the best opportunity, I think, which will be – it's good for everyone, right, given the year we've all had. So
Just one again, one more thing about Aaron Norton. You mentioned his hands before. Obviously, one thing we haven't mentioned is his kicking. But something I've noticed is that I referred to him as a big game player before. I've noticed that at the clutch moments, he tends to kick straighter. I don't know why that is. At the beginning of the game, he doesn't kick so straight. Whoa. Usually it's at the pivotal moment of the third quarter when he takes a mark that he kicks straight. And so I'm hoping that, therefore, during the grand final, he'll kick extremely straight, but I just don't know.
Is there any players you can think of who really did lift in a grand final and maybe just kicked so straight and just really pulled the best game out of it? Anyone you can think of, Chaz?
Some people come to mind. There are some people who were robbed of a Norm Smith in particular that sort of come to mind. Is that the right answer there, Danny? I mean, Tom played on the Premier League final as well. Wasn't this the grand final?
There's no one in this call who kicked super straight in the granny, Danny. I didn't kick that straight. I kicked a few straight, but I missed a couple as well.
Did you? Oh, okay. I thought you got 3-1.
3-2.
3-2. Oh, okay. You dud.
I missed the actual sealer, Danny, at the end, remember?
I do remember that.
That would have been the sealer.
I don't remember. I've just rewatched the DVD so many times that I've gone, oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been the Norm Smith and everything. But I'm sure you're devastated.
I don't want to keep on coming back to the Premier League final, though. But like I said, that was my grand final. But honestly, when Jordan Roughead went down, it was like in the first quarter or beginning of the second or something like that, and you were left on your own rucking for the rest of that match against the biggest thugs in the game. And
Who had a grudge against him?
Sorry?
Yeah. Who had a grudge against me?
Yeah, exactly. And because also that game, I remember thinking the whole time I was thinking, we are just clinging on. Like, they are faster than us. They are stronger than us. They are definitely thuggier than us. And we are just hanging on. If they get four goals up, we're not going to get them back. We are just hanging on.
No.
And we kept on just hanging on until we ended up winning. And it was off the back of your ruck work. So honestly, you always got beer from me, Tom.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I think the biggest thing that people get wrong about that game is that everyone goes, oh, how is it rucking against Shane Mumford? But it wasn't rucking against Shane Mumford that was the issue. I could handle him that night for whatever reason. It was that Rory Lobb, who's got the wingspan of an aeroplane, that I had the issues with. Because I'd ruck against Mummy for 20 minutes straight by myself, and then they'd throw Rory Lobb in there fresh, coming out of the forward line for 5 minutes, and I'd get annihilated. So he was giving me the biggest issues. And then they would come in there and try and, like, you know, beat you up and be like, oh, Rory's all over you. I'm like, mate, if Rory had rucked against Mummy for the last 20 minutes, I'd be all over him too, you know?
Well, I'm excited to have this extra week because it gives us another week where I can go to, like, I went to the shops today with my kids, both wearing full Bulldogs kit. We've got the, you know, we're doing the, you know, I can't paint my face because I'm not a child, but I'm an adult, so I've put chalk on my fence. I can't paint it because I'm renting. But
you are Scottish though, Danny. You know, You can probably paint your face. Isn't that the Scottish thing?
Oh, like Braveheart style.
Yes. Yeah, so there's your excuse.
All right.
It is. I don't live in Melbourne, but it is the rule, isn't it, that you're allowed to wear a jersey during grand final week. That's the only time you're allowed to wear a jersey. If you're an adult. That's the only time an adult can wear a jersey. So, yeah.
Let's not say that permeates into every sector of society as being acceptable, Chad. It's a very distinct view. And if it's been 62 years between the last premiership, it's okay. But if it's been five, no good.
Yeah, it's definitely like if we say we made the grand final next year, I don't think I can wear the Guernsey then during the week. I could wear a baseball cap, maybe a scarf the day before. But you're just rubbing it in at that point.
Gotcha.
There's Melbourne hats and paraphernalia everywhere that I can see. Running shorts, hats, scarves. They do have quite a long-standing fan base, I'm sure, that all gave up on them for the last 15 years and have now finally come back from the woodwork to support them. So,
and I should say this officially. I do have some very good friends who are Demons fans who I love dearly, like Titus O'Reilly is probably the most famous. Rob Sitch is a good mate of mine. If we do lose, I will be devastated, but only the most hardened, angry footy fan would be begrudging of seeing Max Gawn and Simon Goodwin hold up that cup. Yeah. They are very good humans, and I'll be very happy for them eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few players at Melbourne that have done it the hard way. They've come a long way to be here. To see Nathan Jones obviously not get across the line, pretty tough considering he's a 300-game player. Some of the other guys that come to mind, I mean, Tom McDonald's been through thick and thin at that joint. I mean, imagine some of the experience he's had over the journey. Some of the guys that have come and gone, no pun intended, but it came out pretty, you know, came out pretty good. So,
job at the Herald Sun.
I agree. After a week of us, after us losing, I'll probably be able to give them their credit. And you know, Max Gawn in particular, I've got a bit of a soft spot for the way he plays. It's pretty phenomenal.
We've got
a hard luck story or two of our own. Though. I know you're not going to. I'm not going to ask you about this, Tom, because I know you're not going to want a Riley West style moment. I know you're best mates with Mitch Wallace, but speaking for myself, I feel really sorry for Mitch Wallace in that he missed 2016 with the worst injury I've ever seen in football. And then this year, like, I don't know what Bevo's got with him, but whatever reason, like maybe he thinks he's too slow or what, but yeah, even in round 22, when we had no forward line and the midfields were falling apart, and you would have thought that's a good time for Mitch Wallace to come in to bring some leadership. Still not there. And like, he's been like showing the kind of class and quiet sort of intelligence that you expect from him. So he hasn't made a racket about it. But if we do win that premiership in 2 weeks' time, I'm gonna be thinking for Mitch as well. Like, I'm gonna feel a bit sorry for him, I must say. Like, it's a tough situation.
I won't get into it too much. Obviously, I'm a bit biased in this situation. Yeah. What I will say is that all of the things I've heard from within the Bulldogs camp is that Mitch has been carrying himself with an extraordinary amount of professionalism and energy that, you know, clearly has to be somewhat fabricated for the benefit of his teammates. So kudos to him to not give up the leadership mantle, which, look, it's not surprising that he has stuck to his values that he's held for a long period of time. But knowing exactly how hard it is, even over a short period of time, to pretend like you're happy when you feel like you're hard done by, he's done a fantastic job. But so I want to know, this Riley West moment, is that when he came out and Scott West came out and said his son should be in the team? Is that what you're referring to?
I was referring to when Riley West was in the team and Scott West put out a Facebook post. Scott West put out a Facebook post. So you're saying that
I don't think I would quite get the same vitriol from the fans if I said, oh, look, I'd love Mitch to be in the team, as opposed to like a legend of the club basically just going out and abusing people on Facebook. But I do appreciate you trying to, you know, help me navigate those sharky waters. That was nicely done.
Chad, after that Riley West incident happened, we got a few messages on our socials from people going, why don't you get Scott West on as a guest to nut out this thing? And I said, hey, Boydie, is that a good idea? And you went, Are you the dumbest person in the world? Why would we annoy the club? Do you want favours from them later on? You're a moron. And I went, yeah, that's a good point, Boydie.
I said to him, Chad, I said, do you ever want another player from the Western Bulldogs who is still currently playing to come on this podcast? Because if we do that, in the middle of like this enormous blow up, obviously, between the past and the present. Yeah. Oh, God, it was so funny. And Danny like had this voice looking like, why don't we get Scott on? I was like, why don't we just bloody not do this podcast anymore?
And here's the annoying thing. What year were you born, Boydie?
95.
95, yeah. I'm 13 years more mature than him.
95? I just realized 95 is when I started supporting the Bulldogs. So it must have been subconsciously because of your birth. Funeral.
Yeah, the day of Ted Whitten's funeral, if people don't know that. That is the day that Tom Boy died. So clearly you are the reincarnation of Mr. Football. Oh, sorry, had his funeral. So you know, what happens when you die? I mean, this is scientific fact.
He said that it was the day I died.
Oh, it's a dosh. Well, you just are Mr. Football. So what happens when you die? You stick around for a week as a ghost and then you get to see your own funeral and then you are passed on to the next generation and all of your skills from the past life go into it. So you got all of EJ's enthusiasm and skill and handsomeness. None of the longevity, nah. You're a bit like his son. Do you know his son, Ted Whitten Jr., was a great footballer, but did an ACL, and back then that was a career ender.
Really?
Yeah.
You know far more about the Bulldogs history than I do, Danny, so, you're a bit older than me. How old are you? What, 50 this year? Is that where we're at?
I just look it. I'm only 30. I'm in my liver year. I'm 39, but I do look a lot older. And my theory is, because as you said, my dad's from Glasgow, mum's from Northern Ireland. My DNA is not used to living this long. I'm supposed to have been killed in a terrorist or a bar fight by the age of 35. Guess the 39, it's just my cells going, what is this? What do we do? Ah, Jesus. Ah, God.
I was thinking that you're going to go down the track of like your heritage not used to having this much sunlight. So you're just withering.
That's another factor.
Might be the case. Danny, do we want to have a chat about this this upcoming event we've got going on next week, which is very exciting because we do need to talk about it during today and we're 32 minutes in.
Yes.
We've got something very exciting on the horizon, Chad.
As people, regular listeners would know, this was a fortnightly podcast and then once we got into finals, we thought, let's do one every week we're in the finals. You know, this will be good. And then we're in the granny, so we go and suddenly 2 weeks to fill and there's no guest better than Chaz Licadello. So what we're going to do, my friends, is we're going to do a live podcast online. Everyone is welcome. We're charging $10 a pop. It's not going to be released, by the way. This is just going to be a one-off broadcasted thing. So if you want to hear it, you got to come along. $10 a pop per household. We're going to get some famous guests back. We haven't locked anyone in, but I'm just going to say we're going to get Merv Hughes, Lin Jong, Ted Whitten through Tom Boyd. it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be next Wednesday at, I think, 7:30 is what we locked in. It's going to be on Zoom. So the way it'll work, we've got a try booking link that'll be put on our socials. It'll be on there now by the time this is released. And, get involved and we'll email you the link to the show like a couple hours before and then come and watch Boydie and myself and some guests talk about how we are definitely going to win this grand final.
Yeah, it's going to be the grand final preview that you really want to see because, you know, it's a bit stale when you've got non-Bulldogs people talking about a Bulldogs grand final or non-Melbourne people talking about a Melbourne grand final. You want to actually hear about what's actually going on and how we can, never, ever even consider losing, basically. That's what you want. You want full confidence going into the game. So we're very excited about that coming up, Chad. So be sure to tune in, mate.
Wednesday week. I'll be there.
That's great. Week's time.
Yeah. Fantastic.
A week's time, yeah. And also, some of the stats, if you want to know about how we're definitely going to win, I got an email from a fan of the show called Tristan Zarafa, who fancies himself, and he's looked up some stats. I was going to say fancies himself as a statistician, but no, he is. He's done a brilliant job here. So he's just... He's sent me all these things with the subject, the stars are aligning. So I'll just read out to you what he's posted. 2016, Bulldogs lose final home and away game of the season before winning elimination final by 8 goals. 2021, Bulldogs lose final home and away game of the season before winning elimination final by 8 goals. That's the first one.
That's it.
Okay. I was about to say, you better keep going because that's not enough for me, mate. I need more.
Okay, we got four more. Okay.
Okay, okay, okay.
2016, Bulldogs are 9.5 underdogs in their semi-final. They are 11 points behind at quarter time. Jack McRae's 39 disposals, Bulldogs win. 2021. Bulldogs are 9.5 underdogs in their semi-final. 11 points behind at quarter time. Jack McRae has 39 disposals. Bulldogs win.
Wow. Well, that's uncanny, except for the fact that Jack McRae gets 39 disposals every single.
I also feel the crack. All right. How's this one?
The pattern might break down at the preliminary final. I feel they were quite different.
Yeah.
It does not, Chas. It does not.
Okay. All right.
2016. Geelong lose preliminary final on Friday night. Smith kicks opening goal, including 4 goals for the match. Bulldogs win on the road as underdogs. 2021, Geelong lose preliminary final Friday night. Smith kicks opening goal, including 4 goals for the match. Bulldogs win on the road as underdogs.
That is actually extraordinary. Wow. Yeah. Clay Smith, Chad.
Yeah.
You thinking about
it? Yeah, I'm aware it wasn't Bailey. Exactly. Okay, yeah, that's pretty good.
We've had a few Smiths over the years.
It wasn't Rowan Smith. Wasn't who was the other? There was one.
John Smith.
Oh yeah, what a legend! All right, here we go. One more for you.
Yeah.
2016. Oh, we play the minor premier in a grand final. 2021. Play the minor premier. How's this? We've reversed the South Australian finals curse. In 98, the fifth-place Crows demolished second-place Dogs to go through the grand final as minor premiers. 2021, the fifth-place Doggies demolish the second-place Powers, at still Adelaide, to go through the grand final against the minor premiers.
We should have stopped before the last one. What was his name, Danny? Tristan, did you say?
Tristan, yeah.
Tristan, thank you, Tristan. They're very, very good. Actually, the first three in particular were extraordinary.
Yeah, that was very good.
It is pretty good. And someone else sent me a stat that in 1954, Melbourne beat Geelong to get into the grand final.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay.
70 years apart. What were you saying, Chad? So we are having a couple of a little bit of latency delays with you.
No, all good. I was just saying that I was loving the stats, but I didn't like being reminded of 1997 and 1998 because, honestly – you hear stories about people not enjoying the preliminary finals in 97, 98. But for me, I think I possibly had the worst experience that any Bulldogs fan has ever had at a preliminary final in 1997. Because I'm going to try and keep this very short. But it was my mum bought me a mystery flight. I don't know if you remember them, but they're these mystery flights where you could get a cheap flight to any place. But when I say any place, it's always Adelaide. Every single time it's Adelaide. That's the mystery when you're going to Adelaide, right? Anyway, and so she bought me this mystery flight. And it was on preliminary final day. And I thought, oh, okay, all right. Well, I've got to do it. It's my birthday, whatever. It was my birthday present. I've got to do it even though I want to watch the preliminary final. But I was going to a pub and watch it there. So I go to Adelaide. I go to the zoo in the morning. And then I go to the pub, the Adelaide pub, to watch the Dogs play Adelaide in the preliminary final.
The only one.
Yeah, and you can see where this is going. And I was there for the first three quarters while the Dogs were just dominating. And I was pretty well restrained because I would have been killed if I'd acted like I wanted to act because I was just surrounded by filthy Adelaide supporters.
Yeah.
But so I was very restrained. But they knew that I was a Dogs fan because I had mentioned it beforehand. And so they were really, really filthy at me. And then, obviously, we all recall what happened after that, which was we lost the unlosable preliminary final. And they literally chased me out of the pub. It was a horrible, horrible day where both in terms of the loss from the Dogs, but also for my own life, I got this close to being killed in an Adelaide pub. It was just the worst. And I was still in Adelaide at the end of that. So it just couldn't get worse.
Yeah.
Boydie, can we just, if you're going to pick apart my stats, I'm going to pick apart this story here from Chaz Ligadello. The two words that I'm going to take umbrage with is when you said I was pretty restrained. Now, are we to believe that the man who, didn't you try and dress as a terrorist and attack Barack Obama in person? Are we to believe that you sat there as your team was winning a prelim final, just sat there going, well, golly gosh, what a pleasant day this is?
Well, look, first of all, the Osama bin Laden thing was about life and death. It wasn't about football, which is much more important. So let's just put that on that side. Secondly, there are all kinds of footy supporters, as you know, and then and there's some of the footy supporters are like I know what kind you are, Danny. You're definitely the loud kind. I've been to the footy with you before, whereas I'm the kind who sits there with my radio on and just curls up in the fetal position and doesn't breathe for the entire game. That's the way I play it.
And then when we win,
I go crazy. So I couldn't make a noise even if I wanted to. I couldn't make a peep. I just get so scared during games.
It's the strangest thing when you get to a footy club when you're like 18, 19, when I first got to the Dogs, and you just got like the prelim is like the boogie word around town. You like can't say it. Everyone's so terrified and traumatized at the Bulldogs from the past 20 years of prelims that it was like, We don't talk about those things. We just do not talk about them. And I was like, I didn't really understand it. But then obviously, you know, I've told Danny this story before, but like when you get to a grand final, when we got to the grand final in 2016, the fan interaction was extraordinary that week. Like between the prelim and the grand final, our training sessions in public, pre-game, and then obviously the grand final parade. It's like, it makes more sense when you hear like the thousand stories of all of these tragic prelim experiences that all the Dogs players, Dogs fans have had over the years. So it is, it's a part of the history of the building at the moment, I think. So,
and you know that some Port Adelaide fans will be telling the story of last Saturday night when the Port finally win the flag.
Yeah. Well, what if Port, they've come off, they won in 2004, obviously, but then they got absolutely demolished in 2007. Yeah. And they haven't been near it really since, have they?
No, they were in within a kick in 2014. Hawthorn got a couple of dodgy free Hawthorn. Kicks.
Yeah, that's right.
And then last year against Richmond. I think they were robbed. There were some dodgy things last year's prelim.
So they've got a pretty good run of lost prelims up their sleeve now.
Yeah. This is theirs. This is their mantra now. We've reversed the curse. This is what Tristan pointed out.
Yeah. And you know what? The other crazy analysis you can do is that both of those prelims happened on days ending with Y.
Whoa!
Insane. By the way,
actually, someone did point out on Twitter that the grand final this year is on September 25, is it? Or September, hang on, I can look it up. September 25, and the 1954 grand final was on September 25.
There you go. Sold.
Okay.
By the way, on the subject of blown out, how poor they have their hard luck stories, I was just thinking the other day that because we're getting used to this team overcoming adversity, I don't know about you, but if we did win this premiership, and yeah, if I'm not giving us the mocker, but if we did win this premiership, that would be now creating a pattern of where you go, well, this is an impossible situation, and then they find a way to make it possible. And I wonder if this era is going to end eventually, hopefully 10 years time or 5 years time, whatever, but this era is going to end with a 150 point thrashing. When we think to ourselves, oh, we got this, we always do the impossible. And then it turns out on that particular occasion, the impossible was well and truly impossible. And our 35-year-old Bont just gets absolutely blown out of the water in this Geelong-style loss. Yeah.
But it's definitely possible, right?
Eventually. I remember.
Not now.
Oh yeah!
During end of 2017, when we played the Giants at Marvel, there was one passage of play, and we needed to win every game to make the finals. But we'd won a couple on the trot, and we were up and about. And there was one passage of play in the second quarter, and it happened right in front of me in the crowd, where Bob Murphy sort of just grabbed one out of a um, out of a out of a boundary throw-in and slotted it from the boundary. And I remember turning to my mate and I go, mate, we're going back to back. If that's what we're pulling out. We got this. And at that point, I went, of course, we're doing it the hard way. We won it from seventh last year. We'll win it from eighth this year. And then, yeah, the Giants put on 10 goals and Luke Dalhouse got kicked in the face.
And Bont broke, what was it, Nick Haynes' larynx or something? Was always that the case? Yeah, that was pretty rough. I don't know. Yeah. I think everyone wants to get hung up in this whole, like, this is 2016 times 2 or 2.0, but it's definitely not. I mean, this team's so different. We've been far better throughout the year. If you're being honest with yourself, the two best teams of the year are in the grand final. The Bulldogs had three bad games to finish the year, basically. And the other thing is, like, we were genuinely subjected to fair underdog status in 2016. This year, we've just been thrown a bad hand, basically, by COVID and all of the scheduling situation. So we've got an equal run in now. Couldn't be fairer at this stage, I don't think. So best team will win.
Feeling pretty good. I got a final question before we finish up to Chad. One of the things we have been to the footy together, Chad, and the story I always tell everyone is at the footy, Tom, I drink beer and I eat, you know, hot chips, pies, you know, the norm of footy food. My guy Chaz Licadello comes and sits with me. We didn't really know each other that well, but I was excited to get to know you during this game. He pulls out of his bag a bulb of fennel. And just starts ripping off leaves and chunks and eating it like it's a bag of chips.
Yeah.
It was, and then you pulled it out of your bag. You'd just been at an Asian grocery place and it was, I don't even know what it was. It was like octopus flavored twisties or something. What is with you and the weird food?
Yeah, look, you got the full Chaz experience there. That is the case. I like junk food. I'm obsessed with junk food and I like exotic junk food. So, yeah, I do go to weird Asian groceries and usually pick stuff that's way past the expiry date. But at the same time, if you eat as much junk food as I like to eat, you blow up like a blimp. So I need to balance it with just zero carb snacks as well. So I'll in one hand have junk food, in the other hand have fennel or capsicum or celery or something like that. It's a weird mix, but it works for me.
It's the greatest justification when someone goes, look, if I just eat vegetables, then I can eat as many hamburgers as I want. They just cancel each other out.
Four large pizzas and a Diet Coke, please.
Dave, just before we finish off, I know we've got some, you're saying this is the last question, but I just have to ask Tom something. As someone who has, you know, I'm sure you've still got mates at the club, and I know you do. If you can just explain something to me, which has been befuddling me all year, do you have any idea what is going on with Bevo and the team sheets on Friday? Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, especially in the middle of the year, they started putting out team sheets where every single person was in an obviously wrong position. Like Bont was at fullback.
Yeah.
And Norton was playing ruck. And it was just like, it was like they were taking a piss. And it was about a month where they're doing it every single week. And it was getting worse and worse. Do you have any idea what was going on there?
Yeah. Danny, we've spoken about this before, haven't we? About there's some coaches who like to play around with these things pre-games. We've spoken about this on the pod before, Chad, but yeah, Bevo was a guy. So like a really good example of it is in 2015, we flew down to Tassie. It was my third game at the football club. We're going up against the Hawks and Bont was injured. He'd hurt his adductor or something. And they flew him down there. They got him all dressed up. They made him do the first warm up and then they were like, oh, he's injured. We'll pull him out. But they were always going to do it. And you're like, at what stage did you think that was going to affect the reigning premiers at the time, psyche enough to change the game in Launceston? Yeah. And it's just like, but he's always been like that. He likes playing these mind games beforehand. He's always played games with the team sheets. I think I've heard him say before, it's not him, like it's someone else, but I'm like, it's definitely him, like 100%. So
does he tell the players, like, here's the real team and here's what I'm telling the media?
Well, the media teams get released, what, basically 36 hours before the game, right?
Well, now it has to be Thursday night. Thursday night came back in this year. And I think that's why Bevo was doing it. It's like, hey, you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, maybe that was it. But then at the same time, it's like, because they've got the medical sub now as well, it's all this sort of ambiguity that they can throw. But yeah, I think it's just a game. Maybe it's either a game or it's an FU. We don't want to do what you want us to do. We're going to name our team when we're ready. Here's the group of players that will be playing. Bad luck.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's that. I was suspecting
it was more the latter because honestly, one point in time, I think Caleb Daniel was right. Like it was not meant to be taken seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. But gone are the days where it kind of matters, right? Because there's so much fluctuations in the prelude to a game that like you shouldn't take the team seriously as opposed to like when I was young, which I know I still am, but back when I was a kid, it was like Friday afternoon, you'd look at the paper, there's your eight games or whatever it was at the time. These are before the Giants days. And there'd be two teams which would be like choose from because they hadn't picked their full side because they were playing on the Sunday. And that was like sacrosanct. You would never mess with those teams. But nowadays it comes out on an app and, you know, you can change it basically at a whim. So...
Because gotcha. Yeah, just released the grand final teams. Bont is a medical sub, so huge.
Yeah. You imagine? It actually would not surprise me. Like, you could imagine that happening. You could.
Come on, Bevo. I know you listen to this. Bevo, do it.
I suppose before we let you go, Chad, one final question for me. We need a prediction from everyone in the room, I suppose, before the end of next week. We're 14. I mean, what are we? 10 days out, so we've got a little bit of leeway in terms of what we actually say here. We've got a bit of an excuse. What are we, margin, who's winning and how much by?
Okay, well, I'm sure that it's going to be close. I'm not sure who's going to win, but I have to go for the Dogs. I am going to go Dogs by 16.
Danny?
Good number. Oh, man, I'm actually quite bullish. I reckon the pressure is going to break the D's, and I reckon we've got a really good mindset, and I'm picking up by 8 goals.
I think that no one will break either way. I think they've got too much to lose. I mean, not just because it's a grand final, but considering that if the Bulldogs are winning, Melbourne have got the hearts and souls of an entire football fraternity riding on their coattails. And unlike last week, Danny, what I will say is that it's obviously going to be an impartial crowd. And if the D's start losing, they may very well pick up a few supporters. So who knows? It might actually work in their favour. So I'm going to say the Dogs by 3 goals, 18 points, something like that.
Norm Smith predictions, boys?
Chad?
I am going to say Aaron Norton.
Oh, good. I like that.
If Aaron Norton gets near the... Norm Smith, we've won by a bit, I would say.
That's why I'm saying all good.
Yeah, well, you, Danny, same. Sure, you got to give someone else than that.
I think the Norm Smith will go to Bont, but all us fans will say Libba was robbed.
Yeah. I was going to say I would pick the most boring of answers, which I think Bont will win, and I think he'll be – you know, he'll be that second, he'll be in that top three bracket and they'll give it to him because he's had the best year among the competition. He might be the Brownlow medalist, who knows? And then I think, you know, there might be like a sneaky, like Jack McRae flying under the radar. Yeah. He might have had 35, but Bont's had 30 and a goal or something. So
I hope one of the Baileys wins, and when they announce it, they say the winner is Bailey, and then they just pause for like, you know, like they're announcing the winner of The Voice.
Yeah, like when every time that they got close with Juddy, it'd be see Judd. Cool. All right, I think that's a good place to end, Danny. Don't forget, everyone who's listening, we have the live event next week. We'll advertise it over our socials if you haven't made it 55 minutes in. To the podcast with Chad, but thanks for coming, mate. You know, long time, never met. You're in Glebe, which is why we've had a bit of latency issues with you because Sydney are a little bit behind of Victoria at the moment. But thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it. And go Dogs.
It was a pleasure. Go Dogs. Riding on past where the
doggies play. Today's episode was proudly brought to you by 8 Star Energy, creating energy for the future and power you can count on.
Follow them on Facebook, 8 Star Energy. Fast way out of Footscray.
says I'm grinding and a groove, and when I go, they line stay.